One of the most extraordinary people in American history is getting a new spotlight. You may have heard the words of Frederick Douglass this past 4th of July. An escaped slave, he then very publicly and eloquently led the fight against slavery, traveling in some of the finest circles, captivating with his oratory. Here is James Earl Jones reading part of Frederick Douglass's What to the Slave is the 4th of July, delivered in 1852, called the most damning critique of American hypocrisy ever.
Prosperity and independence, bequeathed by your fathers, is shared by you, not by me. The sunlight that brought life and healing to you has brought stripes and death to me. This 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty, and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems were inhuman mockery and sacrilegious irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today?
Now, the most important collection of Frederick Douglass artifacts, including drafts of this speech and family scrapbooks of letters and photographs, has been acquired by Yale's Beinecke Library and will be available to the public. We wanted to know more about the man who collected these things, retired Georgia surgeon Walter O. Evans. His Douglass scrapbooks, now at Yale, formed the basis for historian David Blight's Pulitzer Prize-winning biography, Frederick Douglass, Prophet of Freedom, soon to be a Netflix movie produced by Barack and Michelle Obama's production company. And Dr. Walter Evans joins us by Skype from Savannah. Dr. Evans, welcome.
Thank you.
I want to hear a little about you. If you don't mind, I'm going to do a synopsis here. Your dad died way too young in a car accident. You were just 9. Your mom moved the family from the South to Connecticut. You became one of the few blacks in a school there, seemed to have an impact on you. You then followed siblings into the military, then went to Howard University, pivoted into medicine, full scholarships to medical schools, eventually chief of surgery at Hutzel Hospital in Detroit. When did you realize along the way there that you had also a love for collecting?
I was introduced to art and literature when I was in the Navy. I was transferred to the U.S. Naval Hospital, and I met a young lady, and she wanted to go to the Philadelphia Museum of Art. I had never been in an art museum in my life, and I went to the library to read about what we were going to be seeing there, and she was duly impressed, which is what I wanted to do. I started reading more to impress her, but I had not a penny to spend until many years later when I started my practice, and immediately I started to collect not just art, but also books and manuscripts and letters.
Sounds like there were some Hosanna moments there. The Philadelphia Museum of Art will do that to you. Bring us to Frederick Douglass, an escaped slave who became an acclaimed orator, the most photographed man in America in the 1800s. What did he mean to you? Was there something specific about Frederick Douglass, or did you just happen to come across his papers?
Both. Frederick Douglass, as you mentioned, was an outsized character, one of the most important people in America to this day, really. But I had been collecting a while when I came across a great amount of these papers, the first batch of them. And the dealer really wanted them to go to an institution, but the institutions weren't interested at that point. So I purchased them. Normally, most of these dealers who dealt in antiquarian African-American books and manuscripts and letters and things, they would call me. This was in the 1980s, and I started collecting in the mid-1970s. But this time, he didn't call me. And when I got the catalog, I jumped right on it because I thought somebody else might see them, and they hadn't. So I bought the first batch, and about a year later, the second batch, and a few other things along the way.
Well, you answer my question, because I'm thinking when I was first reading that, you know, somebody had passed these papers on to Yale, I'm thinking, just now? You know, and you have an answer there that an institution didn't immediately jump on them is, I'm sure they're all, you know, having meetings questioning that. But you knew what this was. When you first are opening a scrapbook that Frederick Douglass's family put together, when you're first seeing these materials, what's that like for you?
Well, let me just tell you this. The first thing, they came in boxes and boxes, many, many boxes. And first thing I had to do is to have them restored. And then I had archival cases made, many archival cases. They're at Yale right now. So that's the first thing I did. But the clippings in the scrapbooks, they were voluminous. It wasn't until later that the first scholar to really pay attention to this, David Blight, he started looking at this material and was overwhelmed. Now, I don't even know if he's read everything. So, I was thrilled to have this, but I'm a collector now. And once you're satisfied with a certain item, you go on to the next item, and then again and again. It's an addiction. So you have this, then you go on, you continue to chase to the next item.
Well, you have to get artifacts from the author Zora Neale Hurston. You have to get the drawings of the 20th century African-American political cartoonist Oliver Wendell Harrington. You're just, as you say, addicted. But this is your heritage, your past as an African-American. Tell us more about that. What are you trying to do in amassing it? What does it feel like to find these things?
Well, I would never separate these papers. I want it to be together because even before David Blight came, I opened up my house to art historians. I wanted to share this material because what Frederick Douglass was about, it's the same thing happening in America today. I mean, the problems that he was trying to solve, the struggle, it's still here. Most of this collection is about the latter third of his life. And that we did not know in the autobiographies, and we did not know in the biographies. So I knew that I had something extremely important.
Well, it's kind of warts and all. You know, ascending people were maybe trying to take him down or members of his family. He, at one point, backed a white candidate for an office because the black candidate had left the Republican Party, if I understand that right, which was very controversial, married a white woman later in life.
That's correct. He had several enemies in the latter part of his life. As you said, that was John Mercer Langston, who was Langston Hughes' uncle, I believe. But he did not back him for Congress. He backed a white man because he felt his ideology was more in tune with his own. But there were so many. I mean, there was jealousies. And then there was the family. All came looking for him. Family and quote unquote family.
What's that like to sit in your home? Surrounded by, it's almost like the ghosts of these African-Americans you're surrounded by.
Okay. I have several letters that were written by Toussaint Louverture, a Haitian who was responsible for the Haitian Revolution over the French. Yale, about seven, eight years ago, acquired my James Baldwin letters. And at the time, I don't know if this still holds true, but at the time it was the largest collection known of James Baldwin letters. And I have just about everything that all the books signed, first editions of Zora Neale Hurston, Jesse Fawcett, Ralph Ellison, you name it. I have first edition, and in some cases signed to other important people.
Nice feeling. And a nice feeling, it sounds like, to give it away, to give it to scholars and to the public.
Well, yes. I'll tell you what happened after David Blight came to the house. He would come at least once, sometimes two or three times a year, sit at the table. And he did this for about 12 years. But not only did he come, he told other scholars about it, and they started coming, and they told other people. So it was a pilgrimage to Savannah, and they all sat at the dining room table. Now, I wouldn't stay in there with them. I would check in the evenings. What did you find? Because they found things that I didn't even know was in there. I mean, they're the scholars. I'm the collector.
And by the way, it's also going to be part of the film that the Obama production company is putting together for Netflix. I'm just curious, have you chatted with the Obamas about your collection? Or
I have not, but I have chatted to people who are involved with this, and I told them that I am at the age now, 77, that Frederick Douglass was when he passed, and I would make a grand Frederick Douglass. But I wouldn't mind making a cameo.
Well, you could maybe tell them that, you know, there might be a place at the dining room table if you want to come look at my stuff.
Oh, yes. Wouldn't that be wonderful? I'd love to be in it.
Collector Walter Evans. We'll have some pictures of his artifacts at hereandnow.org. Dr. Evans, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. I would like to say one thing. Please, the Beinecke will digitize this collection, and it will be available for the world to see. And the original documents will be there in time for the world to see. And we are having an exhibition that I think will happen within the next 2 years of the Douglass material and some of the other material from the Evans collection, the James Baldwin letters, and the Ollie Harrington cartoons.
In other words, you're saying you want people to come.
Exactly.
Walter, thank you so much.
Thank you.